can be the first steps that we take towards the unconscious. Sigmund Freud, who really pioneered the whole dream, the whole idea that we have an unconscious side of ourselves that might be, you know, debilitating us physically. And sometimes when we can tap into some of those feelings that aren't available to us through dream work, you know, we can overcome physical ailments and return energy to the psyche for a rebirth. Because that's really what dreams are doing, is they're, like I call them, nature's evolutionary mechanism. I mean, we can think of ourselves living with ego as the face of our defense mechanisms. You know, we're here to survive. We're constantly looking for what's out of place, what's wrong in the environment. You know, that's all ego. And if we were to only have that access, we would be stagnant. We wouldn't be growing. We wouldn't be evolving.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and I'm so happy to have Carrie Honey with me today. Carrie is an expert on comparative symbolism and the Eastern and Western archetypes behind the I Ching, tarot, dreams, astrology, and myths. She is the author of 7 books, the founder of the widely popular website Café au Sol, and is a passionate devotee of ancient wisdom and making it relevant in modern times. And she also composes yoga music by the name Get Tribal. So welcome to the podcast, Carrie.
Thank you so much, Yael. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Well, I'm really excited to talk about these subjects because all of the work that you focus on is actually things that I have no idea about, things that I've always been very interested in, and I would love to learn from you today.
So good. So ask away.
So kind of one of the biggest subjects that you speak about in your work, and I've listened to a few podcasts that you were a guest in recently, is dreams. So I wanted to hear from you what you dreamt about last night. And maybe you can kind of give a little bit of an interpretation of, I mean, if you feel comfortable with this, of kind of explaining how you look at a dream when you read it, and then kind of explaining your perspective when you look at your dreams and how you understand what they mean.
Okay, so I'm not sure if it was last night, but the most recent dream that I really remember would have been going to the shores of like a place that we went to as children, like a beach resort sort of place. But it was like a house that was somehow tied to childhood, but, you know, it was different. And so, you know, I think my mother, there were some things with my mother. When we're dreaming, we're basically exploring some of the things that, like I always say, we dream about what we're not facing, about what we're repressing. And people that are trying to get over certain habits may dream of doing whatever they're repressing, that habit or whatever. My mother just passed away recently. And so it's no wonder that, you know, you're going through the day and you're trying not to feel the thing. So obviously, you know, that would be why, you know, she would show up. But when we dream of houses, a lot of times they can depending, you know, like the house from childhood can relate to ideas that we adopted it, you know, when we were younger. And there's always something unusual about it. There's maybe a different room or landscape. And everything in a dream is a mirror of our inner world. I always say, like, if you're dreaming of like a desert landscape, you're maybe feeling not so moist inside, you know, you're kind of like feeling depleted or exhausted or disconnected. If you dream of an icy landscape, winter sort of thing, it can be kind of cold and aloof, not connecting warmly with others. And dreams of being near water it can mean two things. It can be an exploration of the emotions, because water and the condition of the water will tell us how we're feeling emotionally. And also it can be the first steps that we take towards the unconscious, meaning that a lot of times I see people will get the clues that they're after, you know, going to the seaside or, you know, something related to water. And like Carl Jung, he would have been the student of Sigmund Freud, who really pioneered the whole dream, the whole idea that we have an unconscious side of ourselves that might be, you know, debilitating us physically. And sometimes when we can tap into some of those feelings that aren't available to us through dream work, you know, we can overcome physical ailments and return energy to the psyche for a rebirth. Because that's really what dreams are doing, is they are, like, I call them nature's evolutionary mechanism. I mean, we can think of ourselves living with ego as the face of our defense mechanisms. You know, we're here to survive. We're constantly looking for what's out of place, what's wrong in the environment. You know, that's all ego. And if we were to only have that access, we would be stagnant. We wouldn't be growing. We wouldn't be evolving. And so the idea that everyone, whether we remember our dreams or not, we're dreaming nightly. That's what REM, rapid eye movement, when your eyes are, you know, doing that while you're sleeping. If, in fact, people that can't have dreams actually can get psychosis, they can die. So everyone dreams nightly. We don't all remember our dreams, and we don't need to. But I feel like it's almost half of our lives that we're in this condition of sleep that allows us to, the portions of the psyche that would relate to logic, consciousness of myself, or what I think and limits me, those are all repressed or they're abated, let's say, and then we're able to explore possibilities. So back to the dream, you know, I mean, it's just a way of emotionally coming to grips with what's life, the new room, what life would be like in my paradigm without, you know, the constant love and interaction with my mother. So that would be what that dream would have been about. So I don't know if you want me to tell you more about dreams. They're like, obviously, I find them fascinating. But, you know, honestly, I'm interpreting. I interpret my dreams while I'm dreaming. I really do.
What?
It's just, I do. Like, there's a part of me that it's just, you know, like, I can't say that, like, obviously, because there's a lot of people that ask me about lucid dreaming. And lucid dreaming is when you wake up in your dream, or you have the sense of, wow, I'm dreaming, let me fly, let me do something amazing. And because dreaming is that place where we let go of the known, I don't think lucid dreaming has a place for, you know, the type of evolution. And I don't know who it is that's guiding our dreams. It could be God, it could be the higher self, it could be, you know, but it could just be nature. But if we're bringing the ego into our dreamscape, obviously we're not getting the benefit of what, you know, dreams are meant to do. That's why lucid dreaming isn't something, you know, that I promote. But when I'm dreaming, there's a place where I start to wake up, because we go through these cycles, you know, of different brain waves that are active until we fall into the REM sleep. And then we kind of wake up a little and then go back. We have maybe 3 or 4 dreams a night, maybe more. I mean, when I'm working with people with their dreams, they sometimes they send me books, like 6 dreams a day but yeah, so there's that part of me that's able to stop. And this is really good information for people who want to work with their dreams but don't remember them. If we're dreaming more in the right brain, so we don't really have like a clear, nobody can say for sure what's consciousness, what's the brain, you know, how does the mind work? Why are we here? There's so much we don't know. But we can kind of think of the left brain as where our language center is, where logic and, you know, we spend all day in the left brain and we dream in the right brain. The right brain's more associated with, you know, where if a round object's coming at us, the left brain would say, it's a ball, it classifies it, dismisses it. The right brain would, why is the ball coming? Oh, it's round. It's like the world. It's, you know, it's more symbolic. It's more imagery driven. Yeah. So we're dreaming in the right brain and we're waking into the left brain. So that's why it's hard to remember our dreams. So I always say, as you're starting to wake up, just think of like, gently, without analyzing and waking up the left brain, what is that? Oh, I'm dreaming of a carrot in a basket with tomatoes, or, you know, just one image. And then just stick with that image, wake up gently, write it down. And then as you write it down later, the rest of the dream may come to you. Or even just explore carrot. What does orange mean? Orange is a color of individuation. Nothing rhymes with orange. When we wear orange, we're meant to stick out of the crowd like prison uniforms or, you know, so, and the carrot, like it could relate to chasing ambitions, you know, trying to get something for the effort. And so, you know, and again, everything is a mirror of us. Even other people that show up in our dreams are representing qualities that we're examining, or the psyche is examining. Should we adopt this? Should we discard it? So if we look at the dream as a mirror of what's going on in our inner world, and not rush to analyze it when we're waking up and start recording it, we'll start to see that there's some part of the mind that knows us better than we know ourselves. It's more future-oriented. It's more growth-oriented. And what you find is people that start working with their dreams, then they tend to remember them more. Because they get the verification or the sense that there's some part of them that cares for them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wow, beautiful. So you kind of spoke about how we start to look at our dreams, that everybody dreams and that it's a part of our subconscious that is kind of working itself out, the things that we're kind of repressing and maybe avoid looking at. And then from what I understood, we try to kind of remember. I've been trying to record my dreams building up to this conversation. It's not that easy, I have to say. And then how do we actually start to work with that in our conscious brain?
Well, do you have a dream? Do you have a dream you want to work with?
I wrote it down so that I can speak with you about it. Let's see. I can barely understand my writing because I was like sleeping and writing it.
That's so typical, right? Exactly, in the dark.
Yeah. Okay. So there was,
you know,
a birthday.
Was there a symbol that stood out?
Yeah, there was a birthday to my friend, and I was busy. Like hanging things, and then I was looking for a ride to the birthday to the hotel because there was a party, and then I got in to get organized, and then a big cockroach was running towards me.
Okay, so we take it bit by bit. Okay, so first of all, you're going to a birthday party for a friend. So give me an adjective that describes the friend.
Like cool.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So, and a birthday, like we can think of like weddings and birthdays and celebrations for events. A lot of times, you know, that can give some indication that there's some kind of rebirth maybe at play. There's like a wedding might be the merging of the feminine and masculine psyche. That death is always like a rebirth. Like when we dream of dying or anything related to death. And birthdays are symbolic of sort of like noting the time. So it could tell us a little bit about where you are in your life stages. And then when you say it's for the person, again, as a mirror of you, if there's some part of this person that your psyche's like, should I be more of that or less of that? So it could be, you know, you looking at that quality and how to adopt it. When you say you were looking for a ride, right?
Yeah.
So transportation symbols, they tend to relate to motivation. So boats on water can relate to, you know, motivation related to emotion, the condition of the water, is it light or dark, you know, are we aware of it in the light or is it like really deeply unconscious in the dark? Trains can be tracks, the sense that our life was laid down for us. It's not easily changed. We hop on and off trains. Buses can be the ride into conformity. And driving a car or not driving the car can show whether we feel in control of our motivation and where we're going. So if you're looking for a ride, it shows you being sort of open to the flow, kind of, you know, you're not like getting into a bus, right? But you're willing to like, and it could be that this idea of cool and flow and easy and then it ends kind of with a very, cockroach, right? I see insects, you know, a lot of times in dreams where there's something like it can be coming out of the bathroom sink or when people are coming clean, getting pure, a lot of times the insects can, I hate to say it, but it's what's bugging me, right? Like feeling there's something. So I guess the way I would look at that dream is there's a side to you that really wants to be in flow, wants to be cool, wants to, you know, go with the moment. And then there's this over-worrying about maybe something that might make you feel dirty, maybe that goes way back to childhood. That bug, when that bug shows up, and I always say, look for the weird thing in the dream, because that's the key to what's holding us back. And I always say nightmares are a good sign that there's power being released. And obviously a cockroach isn't necessarily a nightmare, but it is like a shadow. It's like something dark and we don't necessarily find pleasing, but it relates to us. And so we have to say, well, what is that? And so that's where you would like, you know, look at the dream and think, what, first of all, what's bugging me? What's keeping me out of flow? What's, you know, am I over worrying, over analyzing? Is there something maybe that when I was young made me feel like I might be dirty or not comparing well to people around me? These are just things to consider. And then that misunderstanding that becomes the cockroach that scares you back into stopping or whatever needs to be like petted and set out into the landscape outside so it can go find its merry way and not be necessarily stopping you in your tracks. So I don't know if that gives you an idea. You know, everything is you in the dream. The lighting, the night versus dark, is important. There's a lot to dreams, but it's always the aha is always the weird thing. And it's funny because people will, you know, start telling me the dream and then just like you did, oh, but then, you know, there's the cockroach or, you know, or then this lady was chasing me with forks or, you know, and they want to say that's not important. That's the most important. You know, the lady chasing, you know, that there's a dream I talk about where a lady's running around a racetrack with forks in her hair. You know, like how would you interpret that? This woman, she's very successful, ambitious. Running around a racetrack is that competitiveness. Forks, like we take it. I always see food as a representation of nourishment, not literal, but nourishment overall. And so forks, we take a stab at, you know, getting nourishment. Hair is the ideas that grow out of our ideas. You know, so having forks in your hair is like, maybe taking a stab at new ideas that wouldn't make life not so much feel like a racetrack. So it's that sort of thing.
Wow. I have to say, I completely relate to your interpretation of my dream that I told you. I was just talking about this with my therapist yesterday.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing, you know, people say, well, they'll say, well, I'm just dreaming what I did yesterday. It's just a little bit different. Well, that's where the fodder comes from, you know, but it's always going to be different than what you experience. And, you know, I think people dismiss their dreams because they're so nonsensical when, and this is where I have to give credit to Sigmund Freud. I know everybody thinks of Carl Jung because Carl Jung basically took Freud's ideas and made it more of a spiritual thing. Like we're evolving, we're individuating. But Sigmund Freud was the one to say, each one of us has this ingenious psyche that's creating these hybrid symbols of very complex ideas. You know, and that's where we get the sense that our dreams are nonsensical, when it's actually, if you peel the layers from that, you know, a duck with a balloon, you know, or what's the duck, what's the balloon, like the way that the mind will create these really interesting symbols. And it's called condensation. You know, that was kind of, you know, that's why when I was actually studying psychology, when I was in college, I didn't care for the idea that you had to take either the Freudian route or the Jungian route. Like they were treated as being very different, where I think they're both very valid. And when I'm interpreting people's dreams, I see the sexual stuff, you know, because we're very sexual creatures, you know, it's part of our nature, you know, but it's always also has these deeper relevance and meanings that would be more what Jung would have talked about in terms of like the hero's journey. In fact, one of the books I wrote, The Mythology of Sleep, is the hero's journey through the dreamscape. So I used mythology from around the world, and each chapter looks at the themes that can appear in dreams, like the survivor, the warrior, you know, warrior from Norse mythology, how Odin loses his eye and what the symbolic representation is, and kind of goes around the world looking at, you know. So I do see that the whole dreaming process is the hero's journey. We are never complete and we are never done growing. And we'll go into the dreamscape and meet those fantastical creatures and have to, like, you know, like talk about the 20 something crowd that are going into new environments, having jobs and identities that aren't quite feeling comfortable. They're not like who they were when they grew up the last 18 years. And so they'll have dreams of someone trying to kill them. It's a very common dream for people in their 20s. That person chasing us with a knife or gun or whatever is this new identity that we're forced to adopt before we're ready. So, it's kind of all, it's all is me kind of thing when we dream.
So kind of like letting go of the old identity and stepping into the new one. You have to kill the old one.
Right. And the person who's experiencing being chased isn't necessarily going to die. We rarely die in the dream. But this new character that we've been made into a supervisor and we have to reprimand subordinates and it's not our nature, you know, it has to be integrated for us to continue in that job and to be successful. So that's all being worked through, which brings up the idea that I'd say 90% of people don't remember their dreams. We don't have to remember our dreams to have them changing us. And what I do notice, though, when I'm doing dream work with people, consistently it's about 2 to 3 weeks that the ideas that they're exploring in the dream symbols that we're discussing seem to then make their way into experiential reality, and their ideas kind of change and parts of them change. And I always see what, I think it was Jung talked a lot about synchronicity, and synchronicity is when something that's been a very internal, personal, private idea is all of a sudden manifest on our path, you know, and it's like, that's, we call that synchronicity. But I see that, I think that's the big takeaway. People who do dream work with me start to see synchronicity a lot, because as you start to work with your dreams, you're aware of the symbols. And then when they do show up, and I've seen people, it's almost an initiation. When the synchronicity happens, they're being challenged to either adopt or fight back against that new idea.
Yeah. Understanding my dream that I spoke to you about made me understand your work in such a deeper level, because this dream that I didn't know how to connect to anything happening in my life, and the way that you explained it, and then it matched exactly this place that I'm in right now, that I feel like I take myself too seriously. Like, I choose work over friends very often. And like yesterday I told my therapist, like, sometimes I need to choose friends. Like, maybe I'm a little too serious and I need to be more easygoing and cool, like my friend that I thought about.
Taking the ride. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also the idea that just say yes. Like, life transforms incredibly when we just say yes. You know, instead of, like, you know what I mean? Like, which brings me to Taoism, which you probably know I do a lot of work in. You know, it's the idea of, like, wandering in the unfathomable and being the guest and not the host, saying yes, because life might be coming to us as a gift, a journey of exploration to make us better. And while we say no and defend the past against the future or whatever, we get stuck. Which is why we dream. Like, what other way would we have, you know, to evolve?
Yeah, so I see from your explanation that really the dreams are another way for us to kind of shift from the unconscious to the conscious in order to work it and, you know, develop it. And if I'm understanding correctly, it's kind of like another layer of healing that we experience. That's, you know, the malleability, the development of our consciousness, our brains, ourselves as souls and people.
If you look at life, like, scientifically or nature and what's going on, there's a lot of chaos. You know, that chaos is being, you know, organized by organisms into systems. And that's really, like, at all levels, humans too. We're processing this chaos, but we have the sense that chaos isn't good, but chaos leads to change, you know? So, like, when you're talking about the different sides of the mind, bringing the unconscious to consciousness, the idea of meeting challenges on the path or having, you know, bad dreams or, you know, whatever it is, it's always good, because no matter how chaotic or how unpredicted or, you know, when you don't have an expectation for an outcome, whatever you want to put it, whatever it is, even when it feels bad, it's good. And that's another book I wrote, is Nothing Bad Happens in Life, based on the idea that, you know, this chaos is like it's the driving force of change, you know. But when we see the chaos, we're not comfortable with it, because we would all tend to want things to stay the status quo, and they can't, you know. So
yeah, could you elaborate on that a little,
on the chaos? You know, that's part of why I think that we have to have a part of our mind go to sleep, you know, be suspended, because you know, the word organism is an organizer, and we're organizing all this chaos into predictable patterns and the known. And, you know, and if there's nothing in life that stays stagnant, that's why we have natural disasters, what we would call, like, forest fires or earthquakes, or, you know, especially like a hurricane that's balancing, you know, the temperatures across the ocean, across the earth. It's all good. It's all well. It's all leading to, you know, there's something which I don't, you know, Taoism, and when I say Taoism, it can be DAO or TAO, you know, but it's basically a philosophy that's based on nature. While the Western world was, like, thinking of deities and, you know, they're like mom and dad or Hera and Zeus and, you know, in ancient China, with the ancient Taoists, you know, 2500 BC, they would have been looking at nature to say, well, what can the behavior of water teach us about the human condition? How is a mountain a teacher? How is a tree, you know, going to tell me a better way to live my life? So, you know, Taoism is really based on nature, which is why I have such an appreciation for when I wonder why something's happening. I know in nature, it always has a good outcome, even if it feels unpleasant. It gives you a sense of joy to be participating. You know, you let go, you live in the flow of what's going on. And that's why, again, while we're awake and creating barriers to possibilities for ourselves, nature every night, like there's so much in our body. We shiver when we're cold. We sweat when we're hot. Our heart's beating. We can't stop breathing. Our blood's coagulating, circulating. The cells are renewing themselves. There's so much going on with us that we have no control over. And the same with sleep. We could try as much as we want not to go to sleep. We're going to sleep. And when we go to sleep, we let go. And when we let go, we go somewhere and we're healed. And, you know, our psyche's healed. So it's kind of a really good world. The joy of living is what I call it.
Beautiful. Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode. I find that so interesting, the philosophy of Tao. I was reading about it a little bit in preparation for this conversation, and I love the concept that it's really about nature, as you explained it now, that it's not really about kind of like a God that is guiding our life or something like that. If I understood correctly, I read that it's about the underlying natural order of the universe, right? Could you speak about kind of what is it, what does it mean, Tao, and how, because I always felt that our life is kind of a flow. And it's really about, can you connect to this flow? Can you be in the flow, in the natural order of the universe? Or do you step out of the flow and then the synchronicities stop and you're confused and things don't work and you kind of feel stuck? So it really connected to me to something that I intuitively felt very connected to, but it kind of gave the words to it. So I would love to hear you speak about it.
Well, okay. So Taoism, again, you know, I call it a philosophy of removing boundaries. That's in its most simplistic explanation. I'm not separate from you. I'm not separate from life. You know, I talk about the 24-hour mind because in reality, we have our waking consciousness and then we have our dreaming consciousness, and it's the same mind having the same experience. We're learning just as much when we're sleeping. So we take away the boundary between, well, life's real and dreams aren't real. How do we know when we're dreaming? We think they're real, like, you know. So Taoism is like that sense of there are no boundaries and everything is perfect. That's another thing. We hear, like in some of our, when we were growing up or watching shows or whatever, if we saw anything related to the Chinese culture, they would say, ah, so, you know, and really what that means is it's just so. I mean, it comes from Taoism. It's like, is it good or bad? No, it's just, it is what it is. And to settle into that, you know, acceptance of, you can see people running, this, oh, it's so good, it's so good. Oh, it's so bad, it's so bad. It just is. And, you know, so you avoid those extremes. So it's really like a sense of just being present. I call it the threshold of awareness. You know, recognizing that we're not the host. We're not in charge. We're the guest. And let it flow. Let it unfold. And what is this? Even when somebody's in front of me having a moment of anger or whatever, I don't have to own it. I don't have to, I don't have to describe it. I don't have to have a reaction to it. I can have compassion. Maybe you've had a bad day. Maybe there's some more going on here. But it it's not you against me. We're in this together because you're on my path, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And it also boils down to the idea of yin and yang. And this is why so many scientists and physicists love Taoism or end up embracing some of the, it's almost like here we are in the 21st century coming up with ideas like binary code that led to the open and closed systems of all of our technology. It actually goes back to a scientist, Leibniz, who was inspired by the I Ching, the open and closed lines, the yin and the yang. It goes to that, you know, and I think it was Niels Bohr, who was a great physicist, you know, had a yin and yang symbol on his coat of arms, because that it's not that we're looking back to an ancient idea of the universality of one energy, because again, I hope this I'm not making it more confusing than it is, but yin is like the feminine and yang is the masculine. Yin would be like gravity, it pulls, right? But yang would be like the force that made the planet heavy enough to pull. So it's like you can't really separate yin from yang, just like electromagnetism. We know that electricity creates magnetism, and the magnetism pulls the electricity forward, which creates more magnetism. The electric force would be the yang, the field would be yin, but it's one thing, you know, and that's Tao. So Tao is the way. Tao is like, it's never been meant to be described. In fact, I did a translation of the Tao Te Ching as well. It's, you know, a book that tells us what Tao is not, or, you know, it attempts to like get a feel for how amazing this flow of energy of beingness, you know, is in its manifestation as yang and yin. And you probably know from yoga, you have kind of yang, there's a yang sense to it and there's a yin sense. And so if it all can be boiled down to the one essence that takes the form of yin and yang and then becomes what they call the 10,000 things, you know, that's kind of how we understand life from a physics standpoint right now, whether it's, you know, the membrane theory, superstring, that there's this one wiggling thing that turns into quarks and leptons and becomes like a table. And, you know, does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. You brought up a subject that I've been fascinated with lately, especially, which is the polarities and the opposites being not two different things, but coexisting at the same time. And you brought up kind of like the masculine and the feminine. And if I can just give an example of what I mean in terms of, let's say, people, that we say that people have the masculine and the feminine in them, whether they are male or female, and that it's not about being just in your masculine energy or just in your feminine energy, but it's about, let's say, if you're in a leadership role, which is kind of associated with the masculine energy, also having the feminine side of listening while you're being a leader. And that's what makes you a good leader, being able to also incorporate the feminine aspects of the spectrum while you're in the masculine. So bringing both polarities into reality at the same balance. Time. Exactly.
Right. Well, and to take it one step further, there's no such thing as polarity. You know, like like the idea of polarity is what would make us, you know, go from one extreme to the other. Now in this example of the masculine and feminine, yeah, I see that in dreams. Like a lot of times our sexual dreams with the opposite sex for women with the man can be about integration of her ability to provide for herself. When a man shows up in a woman's dream, I know she's exploring the side of herself that relates to what dad may have taught her, you know, asserting herself, providing for herself. When a man dreams of a woman, it might be him exploring his sensitivity, you know, but, you know, it's whether it's the man or the woman, the psyche, you know, we're giving them names, the masculine and the feminine. But yeah, like every person is going to have qualities that would be, maybe some people are more aggressive, we'd say that's masculine, or more introverted, which we would think would be feminine, you know, and we kind of, you know, balance it out. But, you know, when I was saying Taoism was a philosophy of removing boundaries, like one of the greatest things that I can teach somebody who wants to really learn how Taoism can lead to joyful thinking, it's to recognize that polarities are an illusion. You know, the mind wants to, you know, classify, organize, discriminate, and when you can get into flow, it's just one big magic soup. I don't know if that makes sense. But.
Yes, I love that. Polarities are an illusion. I think that's a new concept because we think of life in terms of polarities, you know, winter and summer, the sun and the moon. We see the mm-hmm. difference. And we even say, like, there's a common saying that you can't have the good without the bad. But you're reframing it. Right. That it's not really two opposites, but it's just part of one whole.
Yeah, and the chaos that is driving change. And change is, you know, here's the thing. 3.4 billion years, this Earth has been creating better and better and better variations. We showed up seconds ago, like with our little, oh, we're going to figure it all out in our 1 minute on this planet or whatever. You know, to classify good or bad would be like to leave the idea that there are no polarities, but we can say that life has been becoming stronger. It is becoming more diverse. And in doing so, like when it introduced oxygen, it killed what it had created up to that point, not everything. And there was new variations that, you know, emerged from the microbes or anaerobes that couldn't tolerate the oxygen, but because of the oxygen, it led to more diverse, you know, species or whatever. So knowing that the Earth has been creating something better, we're standing here in time and space. Oh, it's bad, or this is going to, you know, like there's a person that's going to destroy the world, or there, you know, it's like nature knows what it's doing. It will kick us right off this planet if we were, you know, if it wanted to, you know what I mean? Like it's a very, so I guess my point is I want to call it benevolent, whatever it is. Like, and again, I don't say that Tao is God or I don't negate God. I don't know. I'll admit nobody knows anything. That's the other part of, you know, it's Wang Su, who's my favorite philosopher from Taoism. He writes, identify with the infinite and wander in the unfathomable. And wandering in the fathomable is a willingness to say, nobody knows anything. And then identifying with the infinite is that sense of not needing boundaries and classifications. And you know, that is the epitome of flow. Does that make sense?
Yes, I find that fascinating. But I'm thinking about like, how do you do that? How do you live life in flow all the time, not thinking about the boundaries? You know, we're so accustomed to thinking about the limits, you know, the limits to our body, the limit to our capacity, our mind even.
Well, the one thing that is consistent among all the religions, ideas, philosophies, what have you, is the development of faith. Faith is the thing that allows us to find pleasure in living. It allows us to be accepting of whatever happens, right? And it's that simple. Is if because I'm not the host and because I'm the guest, because I'm not in charge, I have to follow. And that's why, you know, you've probably heard the saying, the best of all leaders follows behind. Taoism is also a really great, that's another one of my books. And I don't mean to keep talking about my books, but the Nothing Bad Happens in Life is also, it's a great book for leadership development, you know, because Taoism was really also big at helping kings and empire builders and whatever back in the Warring States period, you know, develop the philosophy that would be good to inspire people. And that's why they say the best of all leaders follows behind, inspires the people forward. And then when the work's all done, they say, look what we did. You know, they take credit for it, even though the leader might have had the idea of where they were going or, you know. So when you ask about, like, I get the sense that it's it's normal for us to be protective of us. Me, Carrie, I need to protect myself. Now to do that, and I go out and interact or whatever, I'm already creating a problem. Because now when I meet the person who's angry or whatever, I'm going to get defensive or, you know, I mean, so there's no, I don't need to protect myself. And no matter what happens, I'm going to try to understand, you know, its meaning or whatever, because I'm not in charge. I don't know if that makes sense, but like to me, if I was to say, if you were to go, Carrie, what do you do? I cultivate joyful living. I help people find joy in whatever experience. And I just had a, you know, interview the other day, and we were talking about, you know, the idea that bad things, some children have grown up with some pretty bad experiences or whatever, but, you know, now this girl is an artist. I'm like, you know, how could you possibly be doing the things that you're doing at that caliber if you didn't have that experience? Like, our parents didn't come with directions, and, you know, it's almost like we were put in the exact environment that was going to get to work as a ballast to allow us to really pull the best of what we were meant to be. And here's another thing that I love to say too, is like, nature can't self-actualize until we self-actualize. So if you think of that, you know, billions of years of it trying to perfect itself, every 100%. Single person on this planet we're a variation. Even among our siblings, we've got a DNA pattern that makes us different from mom and dad. It makes us different from our siblings. Nature offsets competition for short supply by creating these differences in us, so that we're like dandelion pods that blow out and find what it is that we care about, which our brother couldn't care less about. You know, we kind of go off. And so if each one of us is unique, and nature, I would have to say, nature may not even know what we're capable of when it designed us, but it gave us that wonder. It gave us that variation that, you know, and so isn't that exciting to try to understand how we can tap it, give it, you know, form? Don't look around, like, you know, to try to be like everybody else. You know, follow your passion, because when we meet obstacles, it's passion that's going to be the thing that will make us keep going, you know?
I love everything that you just said. Nature is actualizing itself through us. What an amazing idea. Mm-hmm. And it really rings true in my whole body hearing that, because if we don't self-actualize, then we're stopping the flow of nature. And it's so easy for us to think of us as like the individual experience, like, okay, just I'm losing from not doing this. Like, it's a shame, but nothing, you know, like, nature will go on. But actually, it's us stopping the flow of all of nature that created us, especially in order to actualize our dreams into manifest reality. I love that.
Yeah, because nature is driving possibilities. Like, it's bringing very unlike things together. That's the whole chaos picture. Two things that are, it's balancing extremes. So like a high and low pressure system, they come together. We see wind, you know, because of the way they move together. But then the temperature then settles into something, you know, that's good for the earth or whatever. And, you know, it's like nature is constantly looking for possibilities. And through each and every one of us, we've been given, well, it's called T-E. So if you've ever heard of the book, the Tao Te Ching, so it's a book, which is the Ching, to develop Te by understanding Tao Te Ching. And Te would be that blueprint, that DNA design, that thing that's inspiring our dreams, our connection to God, our higher self, our, you know, completely manifested, individuated self. Is Te. So there's some people that think of Te as virtue, when really Taoism isn't about being like other people, you know, like virtue is to say, oh, the seven virtues are, you know, that's, we get back on that bus of conformity. No, that's not what Taoism is about. Taoism really celebrates the uniqueness in the individual, you know, and being authentic. And authenticity is more important than anything, you know. So that's what, you know, that's where this all ties together. Dreams, Tao, nature. This is where I live in that beautiful, delicious tapestry of wonder, you know.
You mentioned a few times us being the guest and not the host. I would love to hear you speak about that a little.
Okay, so when we were talking about faith, like how would you describe faith? Tell me how you would describe faith. What's faith?
Faith. Yes, you're totally right. That's exactly the direction I would go in. For me, that's me realizing that I'm not alone in this world, that I'm part of something bigger, that I don't have to create my life by myself, that it's a co-creation with something that's bigger than myself.
Okay, so faith is relying on something bigger than yourself to have answers when you're falling short on answers, right? Like we put our faith in whatever. And to be the guest and not the host, the host would be the one that we'd be putting our faith in. Now, I'm not one to try to, like when people think Tao is a deity, you know, like sometimes when you look at, like Taoism was basically the marriage of Hinduism and, Buddhism is the marriage of Hinduism and Taoism. So Taoism is very old and Hinduism is very old. And when they came together, they became Buddhism. And there's a lot of deities in Hinduism, Buddhism, in Judaism, Christianity, Catholicism, all these isms and whatever. They set out to say what it is, and that's where we all start fighting. And I prefer not to say what it is. Tao would take the flavor of the energy that I consider benevolent. Maybe I'll give it the face of God, or, you know. I do the same thing when people say, you know, what's guiding our dreams? I don't know. I know it's not us, because I've been doing this for decades, like 3 or 4 decades. And I can see that people are being guided by something that really transcends their own awareness. So there is something more, something bigger than me, like you say. And I think by being the guest and not the host is that I follow behind that energy. So when I do meet those unexpected, maybe disappointing situations, you know, I keep my faith in the flow of that protection, of that there's something that's shaping me. I mean, honestly, I couldn't do the work that I've had, like a life of like crazy ups and downs, and, you know, and I've had some things, you know, I've had to experience when I've grown up with death, or like I had a boyfriend die when I was in my teens, and, you know, but there's things that have happened to me that if they didn't happen, I wouldn't be who I am, you know. It wouldn't have put me on a path to search for, you know. So it's kind of like, no matter what it is, no matter how bad it was, it's part of the path that leads us to develop our authenticity. And I had to go through lots of periods of time when people thought I was nuts to be talking about how dreams have relevance. And now, today, people accept that, but they didn't. And then, even in the 90s, I would talk to publishers and they'd go, you're writing a book about what? Okay, woo, you're from California, woo, you know, like, so if I didn't believe in that, if that wasn't my passion, if that wasn't me following what I thonically, you know, resonated with, I wouldn't have continued.
Beautiful. And you said before that the dreams are kind of a way of us exploring ourselves. And I just wanted to say that again, because I think that's a really interesting way to understand what dreams are.
It's like dreams are a get out of jail free card, right? Like our awareness can only be what it is today, right? Like that we go on our path. Now we would easily say, this event that's happening is teaching me something, or I'm learning this on my path, or whatever. We give that credibility to the life experience, but we don't give the same credibility to what's happening in the dream world, probably because most of us don't remember, which is why on my website, Cafe Au Soul, I also have oracles. Because what I've found is that when people can't remember, or people that are working with me who do remember their dreams, they'll bring me an oracle reading. An oracle is like tarot, I Ching, you know, where people have little fairy cards, whatever it is. The psyche wants to know, like it wants to have communion. And so whether they bring a dream or they bring the oracle, it's the same message. You know, so, but I'm saying people don't give credibility to their dreams because they're not remembering them. And I don't think it's important that everybody remembers their dreams. But the idea is that there is definitely, when people use oracles and those cards or whatever, they're stopping and saying, oh, look at that possibility. What does the Empress card, what qualities of this Empress card might be, something I could adopt or discard, or you know, that sort of thing. We can treat it like the same process that's happening in dreams.
Yeah. Oh, super interesting. Carrie, I wanted to also ask you something that I've been thinking about for years, and I feel that now finally I have the right person to ask about. Sometimes when I dream, no, sometimes I have an experience of déjà vu that we all know, but mm-hmm. instead of feeling that I have already experienced it, I feel that I have dreamt about the situation and now it's actually happening in my real life. Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course it's possible. And there's two explanations, and this is what I was talking about earlier, synchronicity. Because when I'm actually working with people who are remembering their dreams and they're aware of the symbols, and then when that event happens, that would be synchronicity of, I called it an initiation, they see, it's the same mind. I mean, dreams are showing us how we've constructed reality. Well, we've constructed reality, and it's the same, you know, in the same way. So yeah, it's not unusual that the ideas that we're living by day, well, we see them in dreams as like our creation, but we don't take it into life and say, maybe we're creating this reality too with our thinking. That's what those, you know, that's what synchronicity is about. It's tying the inner and the outer world together. There's also the idea, a lot of like, you know, brain specialists or whatever you want to call them, scientists would say that, that the idea of deja vu is that something triggers in short-term memory, like a hiccup. So we have the feeling that while we're witnessing it, we remember it, and then we can even predict what's going to happen next because we remember it or whatever, which, you know, may be valid too. But I can tell you, over decades of working with people and having them follow their dream symbols, they start to see synchronicity daily. So absolutely, it's possible.
Oh my God, I can't believe it's true. Like this thing that I've always had, and I would say this to people and they'd be like, okay, yeah. You know, like thinking mm-hmm. I went crazy and finally somebody gets me.
Well, you know, I mean, there's, you know, conformity is the strong magnet. I don't remember who said that, maybe Carl Jung. You know, there it's everybody wants to say that because like the school taught us this or our culture taught us this or whatever it is, don't go outside the lines, you know. And that's so goes against what nature would have us do. And if in exploring your authenticity, that's important to you, that you have those feelings that are awakening your passions or awakening your wonder. It may not be important to the other person who doesn't have the experience, or you know what I mean? Like we're all different. So even though people don't get us, doesn't mean we should ever be different. We need to really cultivate our authenticity. That is key to our success, to our passion, and to our joy.
100%. I resonate with that so much. And I thank you for bringing that message. Is there something else that you think that should be said about that?
No, I think we kind of went around the whole world. We covered a pretty wide tapestry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously people that want to do one-on-one dream work, you know, feel free to reach out to me through my website, Cafe of Soul. I also have a dream dictionary there. I have like a little thing you type in your dream and it will give you the symbols to look up, like links to the symbols, because people don't realize that something on the left or the right of a dream, the placement is important in the dream interpretation. So having that little, you know, tool in there that will give you things that you hadn't thought to look up on your own is kind of fun. And, you know, there's other oracles. And
so just to wrap up, I always end with the same question. Carrie, what are you curious about right now?
I guess I'm curious about, I mean, I guess I would always be curious, right? So I'd like to say I have an awareness that's constantly in a state of curiosity, and then I allow it to come into my, you know, path or whatever. So, I mean, I guess it would be, I'm curious to see whether my mom, you know, my mom, knowing that she's okay because she just passed and stuff, or I'm curious about death a little bit more, you know. But I think my curiosity is like really such a large part of my philosophy that that I'm just open to whatever it is that I'm going to discover. I don't know. That's probably a horrible answer, huh?
No. I completely agree with you. I feel it. Well,
what are you curious about?
Oh,
what? What are you
I'm
curious
about dreams right now. I feel like I want to go to sleep so that I can dream.
Awesome.
Yeah, I just, from this conversation, it really sparked my interest into understanding what it is, because something that is so out of our understanding, as you said, it's like a little bit bizarre. We don't understand. We don't always remember it. And when it's so far away from our natural understanding, then it's hard to be curious about it. But now that I understand that it's another aspect of our unconscious exploring itself and really the role that it plays in our life, I have found in this conversation a new appreciation and understanding for the role that our dreams have in our development. And I thank you for that. I am super curious about Tao as well right now from your explanations. So I'm really happy that we did this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate getting to know you.
Me too. And I want to direct anybody listening who's also curious about these things to go to your website, Cafe au Soul, CafeauSoul.com. Spelling. And I'll also have the links and everything in the show notes.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.